Welcome to the BristolCon Fringe, a series of readings from the science fiction and fantasy community. This podcast was recorded in front of a live audience in the centre of Bristol.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to our first BristolCon Fringe in a brand new venue. Delighted to see so many people here. We've got plenty of room, so bring all your friends next time. And we've got no bleed through of sound from the next bar, which is fabulous. No ghosts either, which is perhaps a little bit sad, but the ghosts have really boring conversations, so we're probably better off without them. So our thanks to Tom for providing us with this fabulous day. They do have really good beer as well. That's going to do for the quality of the Q&A. But before we get to that, we have two fabulous readers for you. And to start us off, I would like to give a very warm welcome to Mr. Gareth L. Powell.
Short story collection coming out in April from Newcom Press, which is my first short story collection in nearly a decade, so it's got a lot of new stuff in there, stuff that's appeared in small magazines and then disappeared and nobody's really read it, so I'm glad to see some of those stories re-seeing the light of day. I ran a quick poll on Twitter today as to which story I should read tonight, and this was the one that was the winner by 75% to 25%, simply because I said it was about a kick-ass speaker. So I'm going to read, this is the title story to the collection. It's called Entropic Angel. For 4 days it snowed. On the fifth day, the angel came. As light dawned, the Reverend Christina Pike saw it squatting like a gargoyle on the tallest of the village's wind turbines, its shoulders hunched over and its radiant face raised to the sky. An hour later, that turbine failed. A few minutes later, the one next to it did likewise. Watching through binoculars from the window of the vicarage, she said, "It's an angel, all right." Around her, the hastily convened members of the village council muttered to one another. They knew what lay in store. They'd seen the lights dim around the estuary as each of the other towns fell in turn to the depredations of the angelic host. With their own eyes, they'd watched civilization sputter like a dying candle. They'd spoken to refugees and army deserters and knew things were bad all over, that without power they were doomed to freeze and that nothing could be done to save them. Pike lowered her binoculars. "Maybe I could talk to it," she suggested. But the council leader, a retired colonel, shook his head. "Far too dangerous, Vicar. I won't hear of it." And so Pike stayed by the window, watching helplessly as one by one, over the course of the day, all the turbines on the wind farm slowed and screeched to a halt, until by sunset, nothing moved. And, stripped of their electricity, the houses of the village fell into darkness and silence. The children cried. The men and women built fires in their hearths and sat around them bemoaning their fate. Some offered prayers to appease the lace-winged angel. Others tried to hide from it. Some even contemplated sacrifice as a means of driving the angel away, but were stymied by their lack of conviction. They had nothing in their village worthy of sacrifice but goats and children, and they weren't strong enough to make offerings of either. Sitting around a stone hearth in the vicarage behind the church, as the untapped winter wind blew in from the Severn estuary, the adults argued long into the night, and all the while, silhouetted against the night sky, the angel remained as still and solitary as it had first appeared. Then, at 7 in the morning, as a bone-coloured moon fell behind the Welsh hills in the west, and a new day appeared from behind the Mendips in the east, something stirred. By that time, most of the villagers had retired to bed, and only a handful, Pike included, still clutched coffee mugs around the embers of their fires. They had heard of other communities blighted by angels. even so, not all of them heard the throaty roar of the approaching engine at the same time. It came on like the buzz of a bee, starting as an irritation well below the threshold of conscious register. One moment they weren't aware of it, and the next they were rubbing condensation from their windows, craning their heads, looking inland for the source of the sound. And there it was. It came moving through the snowy, head-shrouded lanes like an angry ghost, a black and chrome motorbike eating up tarmac that hadn't felt the tread of a pneumatic tyre since the first snows fell. Some of the villagers bolted their doors, others took up arms and hunkered down, ready to repel an invasion of marauders. Only the Reverend Pike went out to welcome the newcomer, flanked by three of the village's hardest and most unimaginative residents. An unarmed and careworn woman in early middle age, Pike stood at the porch door, her palms spread out to either side in a gesture of helplessness and trust. The three toughs took up positions around the graveyard, skulking behind stones, pitchforks and meat cleavers at the ready. With her breath steaming, Pike watched the bike growl through the half-frozen ford below the village and followed it as it negotiated the shattered concrete at the lower end of the lane. The rider sat high in the saddle, a tall man and rake thin. In place of a helmet, he wore a leather cap with fur lining and mirrored goggles that gave him the look of an aviator. A crossbow rode with him, strapped to the outside of one of his side panniers. He prowled up past the shop fronts and market streets until he reached the gates of the churchyard, at which point he pulled over and killed the bike's engine. For a long moment he sat astride the machine, looking up at the dark spires and stilled blades of the wind farm. From the estuary, the winter morning breeze brought the smell of salt and the half-hearted gurgle of waves pouring lazily at the muddy shore. Keeping her hands in plain sight, Reverend Pike walked through the slush on the path through the cemetery. The man watched her approach. As she neared, his hand strayed towards the hilt of a knife jammed in his belt. His skin looked smooth beneath the goggles and his lips were red with lipstick. Pike guessed him to be somewhere in his late 30s or early 40s. "I see you have a visitor," he said. Pike glanced at the occupied tower. The angel still hadn't moved, although she noticed there were now streaks of black, like oil, staining the turbine housing beneath it. "It arrived yesterday," she said. The tall man pushed up his mirrored goggles up onto the front of his fur cap. His eyes were pinched into slits as if constantly squinting into the sun. "Would you like me to kill it for you?" Pike gave a snort that was half amusement and half derision. "Kill an angel?" "That's what I said." He kicked the bike onto its stand and climbed off, movement slow and stiff. Pike folded her arms and watched as he brushed dust from his warm leather coat. His fingernails were painted the same carmine shade as his lips. "What's your name, stranger?" she said. The man put one hand on the small of his back and straightened with obvious effort. "Most people call me Kenya, Reverend. Kenya Vic." "No one can kill an angel, Mr. Vic." "I can." He opened the bike's side pannier and pulled out a short black metal tube about a hand's breadth in diameter, which he clipped to his belt. Then he unstrapped the crossbow. Pike shook her head. "You can't shoot it." She'd seen people try it before, many times. Whatever you threw at an angel passed through it as if passing through smoke. It just made them angry. "Says who?" "Says everybody." Kenya Vic regarded her with an unblinking eye. "Well, I ain't everybody." He walked a few paces as if testing the frozen ground. Reverend Pike ran her tongue over her teeth. She was nobody's fool. "How much?" she said. Kenya stopped walking. He hefted the crossbow in one hand. "A smoked goat torch, 4 bottles of wine and 12 boiled eggs." Pike blinked. "Don't have much. That seems expensive to me." Kenya turned to her. He blew into his hands and rubbed them together. "Do you have children and old people here?" "It's only October and the temperature is already below freezing. How are you going to keep them warm? With fires and lamps? Wouldn't you rather have radiators and electric lights?" pike bowed her head, acknowledging the point. She glanced back towards the church, to where a small crowd had joined the three heavies she'd left lurking there, many armed with knives and farm tools. "I'll relay your terms to the village council," she said. She pointed a stern finger at him. "You stay here." The council meeting took place in the church. Kenyavik waited outside, leaning on the dry stone church wall. The local children, wrapped in coats and scarves, eyed him and giggled nervously. Dogs sniffed his Cuban-heeled boots. As the sun thawed the morning, he pulled off his fur cap to reveal shoulder-length dreadlocks, which he tied back with a red scrunchie from his coat pocket. At length, the church doors opened and the Reverend appeared, blinking against the light. "It seems you have a deal, Mr. Vic. We can't run our refrigerators without electricity, and so when the weather gets warmer, we'll lose all the food we've stored for the summer. We'll starve." She glanced back over her shoulder. "But even so, I should warn you that there's a small but vocal minority that considers what you're proposing to be a blasphemy of the highest order." "You included, Vicar?" She folded her hands. "I'd rather not answer that." "Surely you don't believe they're actually angels from God?" Pike turned her head away. When she spoke, it was scarcely more than a tired whisper. "Sometimes I don't know what to believe, Mr. Vic." Kenya snorted. "They're not angels, Vicar. They're vermin. They're parasites. Somehow they leech the energy from mechanical processes. The wind blows, but the sails don't turn." Pike held up a hand. "You have your deal. You don't need to convince me." Kenya pushed himself off the wall. "These things are sucking us dry. They gum things up. They feed off our energy. When the power stations and the wind farms are gone, they'll move on to water wheels and solar panels, then battery-operated torches and clockwork toys." He held the crossbow down and used a crank to pull back the bowstring. "And when the machines are gone, what do you think they'll eat then? They'll turn on us," he continued. "Do you know how much energy the human body uses in a day?" He locked the string in place and lifted the weapon, sighting it on the winged figure on top of the mast. "We have to kill them before they kill us," he said. Pike had her arms folded. "That's as may be, Mr. Vic. But do you mind if I ask what makes you think you can kill the creature, given that I've never heard of anyone doing such a thing?" Kenya reached down to his belt and popped open the tube he'd clipped there. Inside it bristled with crossbow bolts. "Look at this," he said. He drew one out and held it up for her. It was black and metallic, and as he turned it in the morning light, it made rainbow oil slicks up and down its length. He pointed at the angel squatting on the now stained wind turbine cowling. "It's made from that stuff they extrude," he said. "It's some kind of polymer. You can put it into moulds and bake it." "And it kills them?" Kenny slipped the bolt back into its quiver. "It's the only thing that does." Kenya wanted to wait for noon. He said it was the best time for an attack, as the angel would be at its drowsiest. He spent the time tinkering with his bike and oiling his crossbow. Pike bought him a cup of hot nettle tea. "I have a couple of questions," she said, "if you'll indulge me." "Go ahead." She unfolded her arms. "Is Kenya your first name or a nickname?" The thin man blew steam from the mug and squinted at her. "What difference does it make?" Pike shrugged. "None, I suppose. It's just that, as the local vicar, it's my job to know everybody else's business." Behind her, the villagers milled around in the lane, their boots tramping the snow to dirty slush. Most of their knives were sheathed now. They were curious but wary, afraid they were being cold. She said, And if you fail, I'll need to know what to carve on your tombstone." Kenya pressed his reddened lips into a hard line. For a moment, she thought he wasn't going to answer. "I went to Africa once," he said, "back before the angels came, when the internet still worked and planes still flew. I went to get in on all that fake software they had going on back then, figuring I'd make some cash bringing it back home to on the sneaker net." He took a breath. "Instead, I spent 6 weeks sweating my ass off in a Nairobi jail and came back with a gut parasite that made me shit like a fire hose. But, my friend, I lost half my body weight and I threw up once an hour every hour for a fucking month." Pike suppressed an unexpected smile. "I see. You have any more questions?" She looked at his lipstick in female, honest and scrunchy, holding back his locks. Maybe later, she said. When both the hands of the clock tower pointed to 12, Kenya remounted his bike. To his surprise, Pike climbed on behind him. What are you doing? He asked as she hugged herself to him. She leaned around. From her cassock, she pulled the polished bronze crucifix from the church altar. If you're wrong about the angel, you're going to need some spiritual backup, she said. Kenya shook his head. Stand clear, he said to the villagers blocking the lane. He let the brake off and revved the throttle. The bike leapt forward like an eager horse, slipping and fishtailing on the icy tarmac. With Pike holding on tight, he steered for the concrete farm track, leading up the hill to the wind farm on the cliff top. The sun shone white from a milky sky. The air smelled of the sea. When they reached the wind turbines, he skidded to a halt. The track ran straight and cold for a mile back down to the village, undulating gently. Goats picked at the frozen grass, tails flicking. The cries of gulls could be heard across the fields, and a far-off church spire showed the spot where the next village nestled in a dip overlooking the patchwork, snow-covered levels. From up here, he could see Pike's house behind the church. She pointed it out to him. The vicarage was a low red brick affair with a black iron window frames and a tiled roof slumping in the middle as if tired. The gravel drive had been worn down to mud in several places. Brown wisps of ivy crawled around the front porch, and the one light winked off a cluster of old CDs that had been strung up to keep the birds off the flower beds. Turning the other way, he looked out over the waters of the Severn estuary. To the north, the broken spans of the twin Severn bridges sagged into the brown water like the spines of gut-shot dinosaurs. To the south, the flower-dusted hills of Devon lay like clouds on the horizon. Okay, he said to the vicar, his breath swirling. Get clear and don't interfere. He watched her walk 100 yards back down the track, then he gunned the bike, coughing out clouds of exhaust. 6 times he pushed the engine as far as it would go, redlining the rev counter, making as much racket as he could, then calmly climbed off and left it running. He didn't look back. He walked around behind the base of the turbine's tower and found himself within 10 metres of the cliff's edge. An overgrown coastal path followed the line of the cliff, separated from the drop by a tangled hedge of bramble and thorn. He knew it would take the angel a while to stir itself, so he settled down in a crouch, with his back against the warm metal of the tower. He took a quarrel from the quiver on his belt and placed it into the crossbow's groove. The weapon was an antique. He'd taken it from the wall of a stately home in Dorset. It suited his purposes. Guns, tanks, and other complex weaponry tended to fail when close to an angel's entropic influence. The old crossbow fared better. He glanced up, but the angel still hadn't moved. With time to kill, he took a compact mirror from the pocket of his leather coat and touched up his lipstick. An hour later, the angel still hadn't moved. It didn't so much as twitch until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, when its head slowly turned away from the heavens in order to look down at the ticking over motorbike. It stayed that way for a further 15 minutes, and Kenya started to worry that the old machine would run out of petrol before the creature became sufficiently interested. When 15 minutes had passed, the angel stretched its wings as if waking from a deep sleep. With aching slowness, it raised itself into a standing position and stepped off the turbine's cowling. It fell like a vulture, circling down in a controlled glide. Still watching, Kenya stepped back, retreating almost as far as the cliff path. His knuckles were white on the crossbow, his pulse fluttered in his chest. There was something awe-inspiring about the creature's grace and power. It came down with the insouciance of a predator, its dark, lacy wings like unfurled rags of the nighttime cloud, and landed on the bike's fuel tank with enough force to flatten the suspension and tip the machine onto its side like a wounded antelope. Immediately, the headlight dimmed and the engine stuttered and dropped a note. The angel's wings fell over its kill, tips almost touching the grass. Seen from this close, the thing looked less human than you might have thought had you only seen it on top of the mast. What looked like eye sockets at a distance were merely indentations in the smooth, leathery skin. The nose, a simple ridge of bone, and the mouth, a toothless slit. It had two sinews. Two sinewy arms and hands sporting six vicious-looking claws. Moving behind the turbine mast, Kenny had double-checked his crossbow. He knew he'd only have time for one shot and had to make a clean kill. Although angels moved sluggishly when not feeding, like cheetahs they were capable of incredible bursts of speed when angered. Satisfied that the weapon was ready to fire, he took a deep breath and stepped out into the open. Just in time to see the Reverend Pike marching towards the creature brandishing the brass cross from the church altar. "Ah, Father," she bellowed, "which art in heaven." At the sound of her voice, the nightmarish angel turned in her direction. The slit of a mouth opened and it let forth an angry, mewling screech that stopped the woman in her tracks. Seizing his opportunity, Kenya ran forward. He got as close as he dared and pulled the trigger. The glistening black bolt flew forth, but at the last instant the creature raised itself, and instead of delivering a killing blow, the shaft pierced the angel's thigh. The screech turned to a howl of pain and indignation. The angel staggered and fell from its perch on the bike, landing in a thrashing heap on the snow. Kenya didn't stop to watch. He knew he'd only wounded the beast and was already fumbling with the crank that drew back the bowstring. Chit, chit, chit! Across the field, Pike stood rooted, watching the angel rise slowly to stand on its good leg, wings flapping to steady its balance. The cross drooped uncertainly in her hands. "Run!" Kenya yelled. She looked at him, but he was too far away to interpret her expression. "Run, you idiot!" Defiantly, she raised the cross and thrust it at the advancing angel. "Hallowed be thy name," she called, her voice carrying over the sound of the bike's spluttering engine. "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." The beast outstretched wings towered over her, black and ragged. Kenya bit his lip. What was she playing at? Why didn't she run? He got the string pulled back and locked into place, ready to fire. As he did so, he realised with horror that Pike was buying him time to reload, putting herself at risk in order to give him a chance to finish the job. Moving as quickly as he could, he whipped a bolt from his belt and slid it into place. Too late. Uncoiling like a spring, the creature took a swipe at Pike. She screamed and tried to dodge, but its claws raked the bronze cross with a force that dashed it from her hands and sent her spinning into the grass. As the angel prepared to pounce on her, Kenya sprinted up behind with his reloaded crossbow at the ready. Alerted by the sound of his boots clumping on the frozen soil, the angel span to face him. But by then, there was less than a metre between it and the weapon. It screamed and lashed out, wings beating the air, teeth bared. Kenya fired. He saw the quarrel pierce the angel's chest an instant before the dying beast's claws skewered him through the side, sinking into his waist up to the knuckle. He fell to the ground. For an instant, the angel stood over him in triumph. Then the black wings drooped. The creature's knees went out from under it, and he crashed down beside him, twitched twice, and was dead. "Kenya!" Pike called over to him on her hands and knees in the snow. "Kenya, are you all right?" He coughed. He couldn't move. He felt as if he'd been sawn in half. "I wanted to make sure I hit it," he said. "Stupid, I got too close." Pike ripped her cassock and wadded it into a pad, which she pressed against the wounds to stop the blood. Her breath clouded in the cold air. She kept saying his name over and over again. "Shut up," he said. At the foot of the hill, a few of the brave villagers were starting to move in her direction, rakes and knives at the ready. They wanted to see the fallen beast. She watched them approach. After a while, she said, "That wasn't one of God's creatures, was it?" No answer. She looked down. "Kenya?" By Christmas Eve, the village had been changed almost beyond recognition. After the midnight service, as the other villagers hurried home wrapped against the cold, Reverend Pike wheeled Kenya to the door of the church, and together they looked out from the porch at the electric lights burning in the windows of all the houses on the lane. "We fixed the last turbine this afternoon," she said, "while you were having your nap." Between supervising the repair work and organising the church service, she hadn't had much time to speak to him since helping him out of bed that morning. In his wheelchair, Kenya twisted to look up at her. "Did you get all the black stuff off the cowling?" "Every bit," she said. "Just as you said, I scraped most of it off myself." "Good," he settled back. "Tomorrow I'll show you how to hit it. We should have enough to make another dozen bolts." Pike gave his shoulder an affectionate pat. She smoothed the blanket covering his useless legs. "You take it easy," she said. "You're not as strong as you think you are." As the night's first flurries of snow whipped sideways across the graveyard, she straightened up and applied her lipstick. Then she closed and locked the church door and turned up the collar of her new leather coat, ready to take him back to the warmth of the vicarage. "Do you really think we can do it, she said to the scrunchie on the back of his head. Do you really think we can turn this little community into an army? Still looking out at the cottages and the lane, he gave a slow, thoughtful nod. If you can build more crossbows, I can teach you how to shoot them. You've got a fair bit of food stockpiled, and if we can trade enough leather from the other villages hereabout, we can make body armour. Pike smiled, gripping the handles at the back of his chair. We can, can't we? We can do all that. Sure. She leaned forward to plant a kiss on the top of his dreadlocked head. We know how to kill them now, thanks to you, my love. When spring comes and the snows melt, we'll march out to the other villages. We'll spread the word. The clock in the tower struck one. Gently, Pike pushed Kenya out into the graveyard. Her nails were painted red like his, and she had a brand new crossbow of her own slung on her back. She trod lightly down the path, humming the tune to Onward Christian Soldiers, as the thickening white flakes fell like static from an unforgiving sky. Thank you.
Bristol Confringe is a monthly podcast produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy174. We'd like to thank the famous Royal Navy volunteer for providing us with a venue, and we'd like to thank you for listening. If you would like to keep up to date with our events, please like our Bristol Confringe page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at BrizConFringe.